Από πού ερχόσασταν και πού πηγαίνατε?
Από Λονδίνο ήμουν για Αθήνα.
Τέλος, καλό, όλα καλά.
Once thriving settlements, many of Epirus's villages have suffered from depopulation. However, today we are joined by Psila Vuna, a social enterprise committed to supporting local communities and enhancing the revitalization of mountainous areas. Join us today as we learn more about the important work these guys do, encouraging people back to their villages and giving these places a more dynamic future. Hello everyone, and welcome to the first episode of this new series of Epirus Falls that we're doing in Noisyland Studios here in Yanina. Because we've been on location this whole series, it's good to finally be back here. And we've already had an incredible day today, going to a village that I'd never been to before, the village of the Mati, and we were shown around the village by a group of people that I'm thrilled to introduce you to. They are known as Psila Vuna, which translates as high mountains. Hello to Christina, Sotiris, and Vasilis. How are you guys all doing?
We are very well. Hello. Thank you, Adi, for your invitation for this podcast. I'm Christina from the High Mountains. The high mountains are existing since 2016. I joined in 2023, I think. I recently moved to Ioannina from Athens, where I used to live for about 15 years. I studied there and work in the marketing section. This is my expertise in my research and my desire to change my life. I ended up here in Ioannina and in Epirus region. Before I met Sotiris, I was studying in Metsovo in a master program taking place there about environment and development of mountainous areas. So there I met Sotiris. We had a very nice conversation. There was a chemistry between us. And when I was looking to relocate from Athens, he proposed me to move to Ioannina. And then, okay, I met the rest of the team. And here I am.
Hi, Andy. It's nice to meet you again after some years. So I'm Sotiris. I'm not from the Mati, but my wife comes from there. So when I married and I came to Epirus for the first time, it was a big opportunity for me to finally live in a mountainous place and start farming there. So because of my wife, we had a nice house and some fields in the village. So we started farming with another couple. I think you have met some years ago, Akis and Licha. Yeah, that's how we all started back in 2013, I think, when we started farming in the Mati.
Let's speak to our third contributor today, Vasilis, who was so kind in showing us around the village of the Mati today, along with Christina. Vasilis, it's been a real pleasure getting to know you this morning.
Same for me, Andy. Hello, everyone. My name is Vasilis Nakas. I'm also a member of the High Mountain Social Cooperative. I'm a primary school teacher. I'm foraging and hiking in the area of Epirus for almost 20 years now. I consider myself a local. I live in Ioannina since 1998. But my origins are from a small village that is just across the Mati village called Megalo Peristeri.
Which translates as Big Pigeon.
Exactly.
That's Big a great pigeon. Name.
It's a great name. The village got its name from a peak, actually, that's just above the village. And when it snowed, it looks like a pigeon if you have a strong imagination. So,
how did you all come together? How did you get to know each other?
The truth is that difficulties brought us together. And while Sotiris was trying through the high mountains to leave his family, being a producer in a high altitude mountain, I was trying to live out of foraging and working mainly with alternative tourism as a guide in our mountains. That was not easy at all, both for Sotiris and me. So, as he mentioned before, we met in the first Eco Festival and then in the second, in the third. Some more years passed, and suddenly I have this phone call from Sotiris. We knew each other, but we were not communicating very often. And she's like, you know what, I think that the situation is very, very difficult, not only for us, but for everyone. And he proposed me to join his cooperative that in the beginning started as a producer's cooperative. And so now the scope, the mission of the High Mountains is the worth living development of mountainous areas. Our goal is to support those who live and produce in the mountains, but also those who want to relocate. Actually, we are now trying to support our past selves. So I would be glad if when I was struggling to live out of foraging, a cooperative existed back then that could give me some directives and the support everyone needs in a new start. Sotiris encouraged me to consider a cooperation again in my life. I tried many times to cooperate, but it's one of the hardest things for me in our society, for many reasons that we can expand on later if you want. So Sotiris put me in this track, and I'm very, very grateful he did that. On the same way, Christina joined precisely because the High Mountains had already started. There was already something. There was a small network. It was very small, but Christina helped expanding it because she came, also her partner joined us. And I think that step by step, that will start growing with a geometrical pace. Yeah.
Very intricate thing that you guys do, really. It's quite complex. I've been reading your website. I've been learning about the many things that you actually do to contribute towards resettlement, towards education programs. And I loved visiting the Mati with you today to see your headquarters, to see your office, the renovation of the old school. And we were all alone in that village today because, well, you're the only ones who seem to use it throughout the year. Everyone else uses it in the summer, but you're there all year round.
Yes, we're trying to be as much as we can. Actually, I'd love to move there and be more present in the village. It's very difficult because you see how isolated you can feel there. It has only 4 inhabitants, all of them like more than 80 years old. But it's one of our goals to bring more people and see how it can work and how we can live there and make our offices and the space of the school be more alive and people come and exchange knowledge and exchange experiences.
I mean, it's a great location. I'm happy because it's around 25 minutes from Tristana. But it is a great location because you're also very close to Yanina.
That's true. The proximity is very, very important. That's why you have a very big interest from other cooperatives, groups, people that want to use the space to do workshops, educational seminars, policy recommendation workshops. All those have already taken place and more will follow. Living permanently in the village is another story. It has another level of difficulty, especially in a village that has only 4 residents, as Christina said. But I'm sure that this will change. We have already raised the population by 3. So now it's almost 7 permanent residents. And we hope that this will continue. But with small steps, the village has already started to change. It's not what it used to be. As you saw, we have this amazing space, the old primary school that we renovated and we are using now. And but yes, the proximity and the availability of the space are 2 very important factors of what we're doing now in the Mati.
And you faced a little resistance when you were trying to turn the old school into your offices, didn't you?
Yes, you know, everything is difficult in Greece. When people also and the authorities don't understand what you really do, because it's not something that you can find everywhere, like a cafe, or it's easy to understand that someone is investing in a cafe in the village, or in a cafe near, or in a souvlaki space or something like that. But when you tell, okay, we're a social cooperative, we're trying to revive mountainous areas, blah, 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 it's a bit more difficult and strange thing for someone to understand. So, yes, we faced some problems.
The hesitation everyone showed in the beginning, which is expected for me at least, it's not something that surprised me, but as soon as we started doing things and showed our real intentions, then the change was huge. It was dramatic. The association of the village almost offered to us the primary school, a building that Sotiris had asked many years ago, but back then things were different.
They need time. They need to trust you. They need to feel, you know, how is Zagori? They are very close people. This is something that I found very difficult in the beginning, because I'm from another region, not from Athens. I'm from Thessaly, Karditsa. Mm-hmm. People there are more open. But still, in countryside, it's very difficult to convince people to accept something different that they are not used to. So when they saw that we were there, we come often, we showed our intentions, they started to be more soft. And
how are they with you today?
How they expect us, I think, every day. Oh, what didn't you came yesterday to work from here, and you had jobs in the city? This city is not so good here. The village come every day here, and you know, it's
they miss you when you
yeah
come.
Yeah yeah. I think they miss us. Yes.
Christina, where you been in the weekend? I didn't see you.
It really becomes that loving but dysfunctional family, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So, I get the same questions too in Tristano now.
Yeah.
What, you're leaving?
Where are you going?
Andy? Still don't have a house. But no, it really is a place that gives me a hug now. I can feel the change for myself too. And it's quite heartening. What do you think people need to consider when moving to rural places? What kind of a character do you need to be to survive here in the mountains?
It's very important to be open. I think that almost everyone has a romantic idea of the place he wants to go. The reality is always different, especially in Epirus. It's way more harsh, I could say. There's so many things, I don't know where to start. Okay, first of all, something that came to my mind now is that you need to program your whole year. If you want to live permanently in a village, you can't go for groceries every time you run out of spaghetti. You have to make your plans, your groceries of the week, of the month maybe. You have to store your firewood. You have to get used to of being lonely sometimes, of not having company, especially in our villages again. And you, for me, you have to be prepared of the hesitation of the other locals. Some will be curious, some will doubt your will. And you have to be prepared for something new, to be open, to be patient.
I think for me, it's been very hard to strike a balance between being tough and soft at the same time, exactly what you were telling me. And it takes a while to find your balance in the mountains.
It's true, it's true. I think that balance is a word that is key not only in the mountains, but generally. But I completely agree with what you said. You need to be tough, you need to be prepared, and also open, respect the locals, try to include them in everything you do. That's extremely important.
I also think it's about respecting an area that they've been part of for far longer than we have. We can't expect to show up and change everything and do things on our own terms. We need to find a compromise, something between small innovations and also respecting the system that they have amongst each other.
Yes, but After all, if there are no people in a village that want more people to come, then it's not a friendly society. Yeah? So if there is a village and nobody wants to welcome people, then they should stay as they are. So we need people from villages who understand this, who want to revive their place, who want vibrant societies around them. And that's an important thing to welcome people. We need welcoming societies, not closed, so closed societies.
And a real community, not a community only solely based on tourism,
yeah,
but a real functioning village.
This is our purpose, not just to revive the villages in a touristic
sense,
yeah, but relocate them like with people that really want to live there.
With tangible skills.
Exactly. And give back to the community and be part of it.
We've spoken about what kind of a character you need to survive, but what do you think the benefits could be for someone who's willing to live in a mountain village? How could it enhance your life?
Well, everybody has takes his own benefits, but the tranquility of life is
the first thing that I think most of the people want and say when they decide to move or they want to move. This tranquility, yes, and his way of life. The fact that I have so easy access to go close to the nature, for me, even the idea that in 5 minutes I can be in a forest makes me feel relaxed and peaceful. Every weekend I wait this time just to take my car and go to the village, or even during a weekday. Put some fire in the stove, cook and relax just in the house, not even walk around or even have a walk around or go to the greenhouses and do some farming job. These small things change my whole psychology, perspective of life, everything.
Let's talk about the four key pillars of your organization. Number one, resettlement and deurbanization. You actually provide a service and support to those who are actively seeking a lifestyle change away from the city. And you also use a term I like, that you encourage them to become ambassadors. Ambassador is a really interesting word to use, because we are still few and far between in terms of the amount of people that are willing to move back to these villages. And I know I took inspiration with Thanasis Savaidis in Tristano, who left Athens at 18 and runs the Cafe Neon. And he is an ambassador. He has changed some of the fortunes of that village. And he is a huge motivation for me to move to that village. Why did you choose to associate people making this choice with the word ambassador?
Yeah, Thanasis is an inspiration about that, of course. So, there are many people in Greece like Thanasis. Not exactly like Thanasis, because Thanasis is Thanasis, and we all love him. He's our friend. And he did that in an age that nobody usually does that. We see that most of the people who are interested in coming back to mountainous villages are over 30. So they have lived their lives in cities, and maybe they want to change this lifestyle. But Thanasis chose this since a very young age. And what he's doing is exactly what we wanted to you know, take advantage of people that they want to do that, take you around the village and show you everything because they love it, not because it's their job or something like that, because they love it and they want to grow their local society. So that's
we want to create a network of those people, like more Thanasides, yes. around mountains.
There are people in Greece that they love, you know this, you have, maybe you have sensed that, and they, that they love a lot their place. Their small place, their village. Maybe they live in a city, but their heart is left behind in their village where they grew up, maybe. So these people, they would love to see their village to get take life again. So these are the people who are we are searching for, people who want to give life again to their places, and even if they don't live there, they know everything about the place. They know all the people. Maybe they go every weekend. And they would give this some of their time to show around people, to get them inside the local society. So these are ambassadors. They are not just people who help. These are the people who give the narrative of their village, and also they are really happy to get to know you with their place. So.
All right, moving on to the second pillar, socially supported mountain production. Could you explain to listeners of Epirus Falls a bit about the second pillar that makes up Psila Vuna?
Yes, it's, you know, in outside Greece, there is this community supported agriculture, CSA, but there is no legal framework in Greece to do something like that. Before some years, back in the crisis years, not that it has ended, but when it was a hardcore crisis. So back in 2010, there was this movement. It was Horis Mesazotes, which means without middlemen. So it was a social need that people could buy food in decent prices, but all the prices in the supermarkets were really high, like it is now, and the producers were taking nothing out of that. So the movement, what was doing is that was organizing the producers and the consumers. So they had an appointment in a place in a square, and. They ordered, the consumers were ordering food, and the producers were bringing the food there, and they were delivering the food to the consumers. So in Greece, we are trying to hack our legal system to do the same in a legal way, because it stopped after the crisis. It stopped by the state because it was illegal. So what we are trying to do is trying to hack our legal system and our tax system so we can do it legally. And we have managed it after a lot of thought and a lot of work. We have managed to find the accounting process and also legal process to do it.
Connecting consumers with producers, reducing, I imagine, the price of the products they're buying, increasing the freshness at which they buy it, and as much as possible, saying goodbye to the big supermarket.
True. That's a big a big target.
But I mean, I tried some of your vegetables today, and if that's anything to go by, the supermarkets are in trouble because...
Yes, I hope they are in trouble because we are in trouble because of their high profits. So now what we have to do, because local producers are really far from the markets, and especially those who produce in mountains, is to give them the opportunity to sell directly to customers, but with a massive way. I mean, I have tried all these years, and with Vasilis also, because he was also foraging, so he was trying to sell also what he was foraging. I was producing in the mountains, and I was trying to sell directly also what I was producing. But nothing was really sustainable. So not selling wholesale, not selling door to door, and not even in the public markets was sustainable economically, because you know of the distances and the conditions on the mountains. So
and the amount that you could supply.
Yes, yes, yes.
At least in England, for a number of years, we have companies that actually deliver to your door, and you don't always get a choice in what they will deliver. So whatever seasonal, whatever they're growing at that point, you pay for your box, and a box of vegetables shows up on your door, and you cook with whatever they give you. And that system's really worked in the UK.
This is inevitable. If you want to truly reduce the food miles, buy from local producers, buy something fresh that doesn't have to travel thousands of kilometers to get to you, you have to be eating seasonal. I think it's also very beneficial for the one who does it. It's I don't know how normal it is to be eating tomatoes all year round. But community-supported agriculture actually is a very simple idea. It's about supporting small producers, helping them to distribute their crop in a fair price, because usually they get, I don't know, maybe 15, 20, 25 maximum percent of the final price of the product. So in our approach, the goal is to give at least 75% of the final price to the producer that will bring all his products in gross, but will get the true value of what he's producing. On the other side, you have the customers that will have access to fresh, local food of high quality, as you so on your own, because usually when you grow something on a small scale, and especially when it's organic, bio, and in a mountainous area, it has to be good. I mean, you have to be really unlucky to find something of bad quality.
Tell me something. A lot of Greeks come here to their holiday homes over the summer. A lot of tourists might come here for a week or two and rent their own house. How do those people get in touch with producers? Do they get in touch with you guys and say, hey, we don't want to go to the supermarket? Would you give them a list of farms that they could visit? How would that work in terms of the network that you imagine?
This is a new idea that you proposed to us, to be totally honest. We are thinking, our model is based on local consumers. So after subscriptions, the subscription that you have as a Ioannina citizen, you have your weekly box. But this is very interesting that people learn about us or want to learn about local production. Probably we can be open and propose. So, yeah, probably what I'm thinking, like, first thing is that through our website, our online platform, what we want is to make the profile of every producer. So everyone can have access to these people and visit their fields, because we want to educate, to train the producers and make their fields, their farms visit friendly for people. So, yeah, this is an option that we can think about it.
Oh, cool. Well, I will be one of your first customers.
You can be, because you live here permanently. So for visitors or for tourists, it's better to visit the farms and know the people who are producing food around the area. But it's more difficult to become members of the system, because the real power of the system is that the producers, they know before what they are going to deliver. So they organize their production. So if I come like as a visitor, it's just once I would like to buy something, and it's not the way it works. So yeah, visitors can visit, because that's their purpose also. They can visit the producers, but they cannot become a part of this thing.
Let's move on to the third pillar of your organization, responsible, sustainable, and solidarity tourism.
Solidarity tourism. Yeah, that refers mainly to volunteer dairy tourism. We are exploiting this option we have. There is hundreds of people that want to visit a place, our place, and see how we live, how is true life in the mountains, what it takes to live here, get to meet locals, eat local dishes, try local products, as you say, and support small initiatives, maybe a small producer, or engage and take part in an activity that will support the local community. That's exactly what we are offering to our visitors, to those who want to join and support our projects. And it's something that is really helping us, not only practically, but it gives you a unique opportunity to meet people from different countries, different cultures that visit the place you live. Also help you in your daily life, but enrich the area, add more population, even if it's temporary.
I love the title Solidarity Tourism. It makes us feel like equally we can meet in the middle and do something for each other.
It also responds to a question you did before about social life in the village. So when we started cultivating back in 2013, and we were all day alone in the fields and also in the village, this thing, this solidarity tourism, helped us very much, not only in taking our daily tasks, but also in our social life, because suddenly, in the middle of nowhere, in a village with four old people, we had a community of people, for young people from all around the world, with the same mind, mindset, and the people who were bringing knowledge to us. We are hosting people now, since 2013. It's more than 10 years. It's 11 years now. So we have met many people from all around the world, and everybody brought something to the mati, that a knowledge or something that we didn't know before. So we learned, even if we were isolated in a mountainous village of four people.
Could you give me an example of someone from abroad who came and shared with you an idea that you implemented?
Yeah, of course. We have fixed automations for the windows, opening and closing the windows in the greenhouses, because a friend came there and said, okay, I'm a mechanical engineer and I can do this automation. It was an idea, a problem I had, because I had to be every day there to open and close the windows every afternoon, because, the difference of temperatures, maybe you can burn
the
crops, yeah, or it will they can frost during the night. So you have to be there. That's the biggest problem. You have to be there. Whatever happens, you cannot leave. Maybe something happens to you and you have to leave, and then your crops is destroyed. Your cultivation, So it's one of the biggest problems. So these automations exist only for big farmers, and it's very expensive stuff to do. But now with new technologies, you can, if you have knowledge, you can build it yourself.
Each person that comes is leaving something behind. Alex, he came from Canada. Apart his amazing character, his knowledge of vegetables and cultivation, he showed us how to make drinks from fermentation. It's not in our culture. He just picked some pine needles, and the fermented product he offered us was amazing. We had no idea. I had no idea how many things can you know. Kenshiro came from Japan. Again, his ideas, his approach. Everyone has something to offer. Everyone.
And Vasily, you were offering me your knowledge this morning. You are obsessed with mushrooms.
I am.
And we have mushrooms, truffles, everywhere in Epirus, and you are really good at identifying them.
Thank you. Yes, I loved them from the first moment I saw them. It was a crush, really, the mushrooms. It's mushrooms are a great excuse for an excursion into nature.
Tell us about mushrooms, Vasilis.
I will. As long as you want. That was my main motivation to go out in the forest and struggle and run and keep searching was to find the mushrooms. But I think that that was only the excuse. All the surroundings, the way you understand how everything is interconnected, the knowledge that goes from category or from kingdom to kingdom, because to hunt mushrooms, you need to know the plants. So then I had to move to the plants and start learning them deeper and deeper, and then how plants connect with the weather. So yeah, you also have to be a little bit of a meteorologist. But for me, foraging, mushrooms, generally going out in nature is a real privilege. If you have the option to do it, as Christina said before, the fact that in our place, even if you live in Ioannina, in 15-20 minutes you can be in nature alone. And if you want to explore, to forage, you can do it. If you want just to walk, you can do that too. But the outcome is that you will get to spend some time in nature, which is, I don't know, it's incomparable. What is leaving you, the way you leave everything behind, you get back to your natural state. I think that we were meant to live, we are meant to live closer to nature than we do it now. So, yeah, I love mushrooms, but if they were growing inside the city, I'm not sure if I would love them that much.
You showed me a mushroom today that I think is called an Earth Star.
Yep.
If I was looking on the floor, I wouldn't even imagine that was a mushroom. It has a hard outer shell that opens and closes depending on humidity, and it can release a puff of... Now I can't describe it any longer. You're going to have to take over, but I nearly got it.
Yes, the mushroom we found today is called Astraeus hygrometricus. Hygrometricus in Greek means the one that measures humidity. So it's actually a puffball that's covered by an outer layer that opens and closes depending on the percentage of humidity in the atmosphere. In ancient Greece, they were using it as an index for humidity in their cellars. And that's how he got its name. It's one of the thousands of species we have. Each one with different properties. Some are medicinal. Most of them have a very high nutritional value. And they also fulfill the very ancient instinct of gathering food, which is extremely fulfilling. Going for a walk in the forest and getting back with a basket full of great quality of food is, I don't know, it's incomparable, the satisfaction it gives you.
Nowadays, modern Greeks call this mushroom fox's fart.
Yes, that's what they do.
Cut it.
I like Earth Star a little more.
Yes,
Earth Star is way more cute, yeah.
I still have it in my pocket. And this mushroom can continue to live for quite some time, right?
Yeah, its outer shell can live for several years, yeah. Most mushrooms disappear after 1 week, but this is an exception. Incredible. You can use it and check if your hide has too much humidity, the mushroom will open. If it's dry enough, the mushroom will close.
So most of these will probably open if we try them in the houses of Zagori.
Definitely.
This brings me on to the final pillar that makes up Silavuna, and that surrounds education and social innovation. You provide knowledge and innovative solutions to mountain communities.
We try to, yes. During the past year, we drafted a couple of our first educational seminars. The first was about community-supported agriculture, and the second about fair and solidary tourism. About tourism, what we did is actually we proposed to the local communities to plan and implement the touristic product of their area, a touristic product that we call it fair because it's leaving the income inside the community. And most importantly, it is just a part, a small part of the economic activity of an area. If an area depends solely on tourism, it is doomed to fail after maybe 1, 2, 3 decades, but that will change. A healthy society, at least the way I see it, is productive, has everything, has open schools, and also tourism that is a small part of everyday activities, a touristic product that doesn't demand huge installations or investments that doesn't change depending on the different
seasons
or demands or what's in fashion, but offers the visitor the opportunity to live and to see the different aspects of each location. In this direction, we trained, locals and people from cultural associations to see how they could build their own touristic product, how they could run it with the participation of everyone inside the community and offer their visitors something original without turning their area into a massive touristic destination with lots of negatives that follow this approach.
What a brilliant framework, but what a huge task you guys have on your hands. And I imagine you need to visit a lot of these remote villages in order to spread the word, make yourselves and your faces known. That's not an easy task either. Ypres is a huge place.
That's the best part. That's the best part. We have to go around, yes, to visit people and places. And that's what we do in our free time. It's, I don't know, some people would say that it's a job that has to be done. For us, is our life, that turn around.
And our time to have fun. We go during the weekends visiting friends and doing some job at the same time, because discuss with those people and keep giving and having knowledge and exchange experiences. So it's a non-stop procedure.
Yeah, sure. Can you tell me about some specific case studies or people that you've helped?
Yeah, we help also people to, because that's also a big part of the job, to empower people to build their own institutions, I mean, organizations or whatever, or help them empower their already existing organization, like the cultural associations of the villages. You know that, because you live here, Andy, that in many villages, maybe the only enterprise in some way that exists is the cultural association of the village. It's the responsible organization to implement many things, like organizing the traditional festival festivities of the village.
Through allocating budget to repair a stone-built bridge.
Yes. So every task of the village that has to be done in the village, it's the cultural association that organizes this thing. That needs people, devoted people who love doing something without a profit. So it needs people who love their villages. And they need empowerment to be ready and capable of doing so. So that's our special mission, to trying to give what we already know, like Vasilis told you about his knowledge about this mushroom or the nature around. We are trying to give, to transfer to people who are living there, or who are members of cultural associations, our knowledge about how to organize, or bureaucratic things, funding allocation, or whatever we know, and they should know in order to be more capable of doing the best thing they can do for their village. So that's one of our major things. And we have helped a lot of cultural associations, of course, also by the other pillars of our job, by sending them volunteers to do something for their village, but also giving them the knowledge of how to attract volunteers, how to organize the jobs in the village with the help of other people, another organization, how to apply for fundings in the Ministry of Culture or whatever, or how to network with other organizations who can help them to do something in their village, or how to talk with the municipality and how to organize works with their municipality. So these are things that not everybody can, no, it's not in our everyday life. So this is a big part of work.
You really live and breathe this, don't you? And it's obviously hugely satisfying, but also hugely time-consuming.
Yeah.
You're also a non-profit organization.
Not exactly. We are non-for-profit, so profit is not our only cause. So we're a social cooperative enterprise, so we can have a profit if it comes, but it's not our main target. If we have a profit, what we have to do by law is to create more jobs. So even if we have a profit, what we can do is create more jobs and bring more people, help more people in the mountains. So that's perfect.
Vasilis mentioned that he is a primary school teacher.
Mm.
How about yourselves? Do you do work in addition to Psila Vuna?
Until now, sometimes it was, inevitable. But I think like growing now and also becoming more strong on what we do, it will not be necessary to have a second job or whatever. That's the thing. And it should be a dedicated job. It consumes a lot of time, yes, and energy.
I can imagine. Do you get any support from the EU, the government, or the municipality?
We have drafted some proposals, so yeah, we took some funds, some European funds, also some national funds. The truth is that we invested most of it, and we will continue doing so. We are investing the funds we found, and also money from our own pockets, from the second jobs we do. We are investing everything to the cooperative in order to make the things we want to happen as soon as possible. I don't know if that answers your question, but for the last, I think it's more than 1 year now that no one of us has a salary that comes from the cooperative. As in every business, in the beginning, we have to invest, we have to struggle, we have to work, and this is something we all know and are convinced that it's the only way to do it. We could apply for more proposals and try to get more funds, but that is so time consuming that we wouldn't have the time to do all the other things that we want.
It has to do, sorry Andy, it has to do with a business model. So following a business model for attracting much more European funds as we could, it could be more sustainable for us, for living out of it. Yes, but then we should work only for hunting European funding. So then we had to adapt in this way and not helping more mountainous communities and more building infrastructure for them. So we are trying to have a balance again, like my life in mountains. Like in this also, we need to have a balance because, yes, we need funds because we have to live. Eh? We need our salaries and we need to be have a sustainable life also for us. But also it's our targets and our working with mountainous communities that
also matters.
Yeah.
Do you have any link-ups with other parts of Greece or abroad with other villages? Has this model of organization been tested elsewhere? And do you draw inspiration from other places that have proved that this new model of village living is possible?
We are in a constant research about this. Mostly we have case studies from abroad, to be honest. I don't have something in my mind in Greece. I don't know, probably there are communities, like people that, okay, they run a business or they run a cooperative as we do, but not like relocate in a village and start from the beginning. I don't know if you have something. in your mind?
There are people who are trying to live in the mountains, and they form communities in agriculture and sustainable building or whatever. So we are in touch with them. But no one is doing this in order to help others to do the same. So most of the people are doing it for themselves, which is great. And that's what we want also, to do it for themselves and not for someone else. But we have another way of looking at things. And our job is to empower these people, these communities, and more who want to build communities also to mountains. So it's a different
scenario for each community. What do you think the potential is for these mountain village communities if we really decided en masse to leave our lives in cities and rejoin these communities?
You can read some history, Greek history, and realize what was happening here some years ago during the Ottoman Empire. So this communitism, that was the way that things were working back then, in small villages around the area. You can see them now empty, but some years ago they were full of people.
They were thriving.
Yes. And also they were dealing with the rest of the world. They were trading, and they were rich communities, and they were innovative communities, and they were cooperating between each other, producing very interesting things and exporting them outside the Ottoman Empire. And that's how they got also their autonomous local autonomous. And so it's the whole thing about the Greek history. This is now what we are trying, these modern years, is a bit out of our way, out of our scope. So it's another model of development which doesn't fit at all to our
current needs.
Yeah. It's written in history what could happen. It's already there.
So we don't need to discover it. We just need to bring it to the new age.
Absolutely. And of course, these mountain communities were self-sufficient. Mm. So that can at least happen again very quickly.
That would be something exceptional. It sounds almost utopic, but for me, yeah, this is the goal. Being autonomous, producing what it takes to live, and living in a society that is large enough, but not something huge. You can't be in the same situation when you, I don't know, the city you live has 5 million residents. If you are in a village that has maybe 1,000, 3,000, 5,000 people. I believe that in that case, and this is what I see when I'm trying to read what was happening in the past, if a village is prosperous, everyone that lives in the village has a decent level of life. Nowadays, things are different. We live in huge societies, but we live as units. The elements that can contribute to that are, I don't know, are infinite. Of course, it's about producing your own food, caring about the one that is next to you. First of all, getting to know who lives next to you. Supporting each other, working in a cooperation. And I don't know, I will never forget this picture I saw some years ago. I don't know, it's maybe 50, 60 years ago, in a village in Zagori. That a roof has fallen, so you have the whole village making a line and passing stone hand by hand and building the roof, a stone roof of a house. I think they finished in 5-6 days, if I remember well the text that was accompanying the picture. Nowadays, if you live in a village and you want to build a stone roof, you need, I don't know, maybe 20,000 euros. You need to be saving for 5 or 7 years just to build a roof. People used to do it with their own hands.
They say many hands make light work.
Exactly.
But we've replaced hands with
money.
And we've lost community. And so we have to pay for these services.
Exactly. And exchanging and supporting each other almost doesn't exist anymore. It's I don't know why we became, actually I know it's many factors, mainly education, but we became very competitive. We don't even know how to cooperate anymore. I think that it's the hardest part of what we do. Being part of a cooperative is about cooperating, sharing, and caring about the one that is next to you. It's as simple as that. I'm really hoping that things will change. I start to see a change generally, not only through what we do, but more and more people are investing in creating communities, creating ecosystems that support each other. And I think it will take some time, but I'm trying to stay optimist. And I could see that happening.
After all, things are not going so well in economic terms. So we have to invent other ways of existing and coexisting also.
Yeah, the encouraging thing is that we see more and more people realize this and come to us many times and start asking how I can change my life. I'm thinking of moving from Athens and come to a village.
You're psychologists.
Sometimes, yeah, we become psychologists.
That leads me on to my last question. Do you believe the future for Epirus is a bright one?
Oh, God.
Well, in these dark times, because it's not, now it's not so isolated place. Epirus is not anymore such an isolated place, even if mountains are still isolated. The whole world, the whole planet is one right now. And we see wars all around our neighborhood and all around the planet. So I don't see a bright future in general.
At least Cyprus, it will be the last castle.
Yeah, let's
gonna
hope.
Fall.
Yeah, I don't
this
know.
Is what I'm saying to my friends and try to convince them to come here.
But whatever happens, Andy, we have
tried our best.
Yes, we can do what we can. And
keep having hope. Otherwise, I'm going to deep in the depression, I think.
I think you found the title for the episode for us. The Last Castle.
The Last Castle.
That's a good title.
That's a nice one.
Vasily, something more positive?
Look, I don't know what will happen. The truth is that seeing how things advance in the world with the wars and with exploitation and everything that happens, I can't be that optimist. Despite that, I believe that working in this direction, in being autonomous, in producing, in assisting each other, in creating communities, no matter what happened, we will be stronger and we will find a way to exit any difficulty we will encounter with the power of solidarity.
So down with capitalism and...
If capitalism was a successful system, we wouldn't be looking in the past. People would be happy. They would not be looking for something different to change their life. I wish I would be extremely happy too if that had worked, if everyone was prosperous and living a happy life without stress and all the misery we see around. But it didn't succeed. We have to find something else.
I agree entirely. Thank you for rounding off what has been a brilliant series of Epirus Falls. What a way to finish it today.
Thank you, Andy, so much.
We are neighbors, after all. And
it's true.
We will continue having this
dialogue.
Interaction, yes. Yeah.
But yeah, very happy to have you guys as my neighbors. And I hope you will have me back to the Mati, where I promise to get my hands dirty.
Good.
We can't wait.
Thank you a lot.
Thanks, guys. That was great.
Yeah. Did you like it?
You were great.
Thank you.
Okay. The last question.
Nah, that was a good one.